Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. God, we are solving a lot of society's problems during the breaks, or at least discussing them. Maybe not.
We extended our health. Our health and hair loss discussion into the obesity epidemic. And I actually was thinking about this yesterday, whereas I can't remember, Brandon and I were talking about some technological advancement, iPads or something. And you thought about, like, okay, like if you took a leader of a country from the Renaissance era or mm-hmm. something, or really from like the 1800s, let's say a king or a dictator or a president, and they all of a sudden traveled in time to the present day, and they'd probably be shocked, impressed, and alarmed by various things. You know, the internet would blow their mind, all of this other stuff. But I think the thing that might blow their mind the most from a world leader perspective is when they ask the question, when was your last mass starvation? And you're like, well, actually, our big issue is that we eat way too much.
We got more than we know what to do with.
And the president or the dictator or whoever would be like, come again? What's this now? Well, no. When was your last famine?
Yeah.
No. Famine's not the problem.
Yeah.
We eat too much food as a people.
Famine.
Well, and they'd be like, well, what? Like the rich people? No, in fact, actually, the poor people.
Yeah.
They're eating too much food. Yes. how are you not elected every single year? Like, well. And then you have to think, well, actually, no, we stepped down after 8 years. Like, what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, that's. What?
Do you not have weapons to fight off the? Yeah.
Oh, that's a tremendous conversation. I love that. And then the old dictator from the 1800s is like, well, has anything bad like really happened in the last several years? And you're like, well, we did have a pandemic in 2020 that lasted about a year or so. And the dictator would be like, well, you must have had starvation then. Like, oh no, we got even fatter.
It was a real problem. We just had to, like, everybody was working from home and just eating all the time.
That's all we were doing.
It was crazy. What'd you lose? 25, 50% of the population? Oh. Much less.
Oh, my God.
There's rough times we live in.
Yeah.
Awful times.
Oh, yeah, terrible
Awful
times. Yeah.
Always remember that when you get too down on the state of current affairs. For the vast majority of human history, famine was just around the corner. It was like you didn't know. You're like, there might be a famine next year. Yeah. I don't know.
No.
I just gotta go to church and pray for rain, because who knows?
You live in an era where you can get 6 hamburgers for $5 almost anywhere.
Okay. Damn this era where I just have so many different things to indulge in. I've got all this entertainment on my magical phone.
My phone.
That's okay. I'd be telling the world leader from the 1500s. I got to tell you what, man, it's really going to be a problem, because we've got so much food available for relatively cheap, even with the by historical standards, super cheap, even with the inflation. But then also, I've got all these entertainment options available at any given time.
Right.
That you mean what? Does your cousin Cletus have a banjo? No. I can get any of the music from anywhere in the world at any time, including from when you were alive.
Yeah.
Like right now. Here you go. Listen to it. Yeah.
Right.
I've got a recording of the of the composer that you had executed last week, back in your time. I've got a recording of his right now, right here on the phone.
Right. Hey, dictator, show me the three hottest women that you wanted to see naked back in the day.
Hey,
I'll have
remember
this.
Who you used to remember that hag Mona Lisa that you guys thought was hot?
Well, I got
she's
an app.
A solid three in today's world. She never that woman never squatted a day in her life. Oh, she had God. No back.
Oh my God. I'll have her naked for you in 18 seconds. All right. Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman.
Oh, where do you find your virgins? Oh, well, that's okay. Long story. Where do you find your virgins to marry?
All right. So it would appear as though the Tigers are in the lead. They are in the lead. The Tigers are the leader in the clubhouse to sign Alex Bregman.
Come and take him, AJ.
But they are having a hard time swallowing the fact that Bregman and really Scott Boras, maybe even more than Bregman, want $200 million. So it appears both sides want each other, and they've had productive talks. But the Tigers, wisely, because they're not the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Cubs or any of these other teams, the Mets, that can just spend, they want Bregman, but they want him in a way, same way the Astros do, that doesn't compromise their future. And that is the sticking point right now. And this is where it gets very interesting that we live in a world where the Astros' six-year, $156 million offer still has a chance to be the best offer that Bregman gets
right
on the marketplace.
And I was getting annoyed over the last few days. People keep asking me about that, like this team or that team had supposedly offered Bregman a $196 million contract.
I've seen nothing.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. So like, no. I'm annoyed that I had to spend some of my valuable leisure time that I just informed my dictator buddy about. I've tried to search this out, and like, yeah, there's no like genuine reported evidence that he's gotten anything above what the Astros have offered him at this point.
No, I haven't seen anything.
Which is an interesting dynamic. I think from Alex Bregman's perspective, man, if he turned down that offer and it could have been something that made him an Astro for life, or you know, for all intents and purposes for the vast majority of his baseball career, and the Astros indeed did give him the high offer, even within like $5 or $10 million of it. That's going to suck for him. I think for us as Astros fans, I guess it makes it a little easier just to process and digest it. That, all right, at the very least, it's not like the Astros were being stingy or anything.
No.
They did actually genuinely stretch a good amount compared to what people thought they were stretching. But all right, sorry, Alex, you made your decision. I'm not emotionally tied to you anymore. I don't feel like the Astros screwed it up or anything.
No, and this would be the second one, Correa being the other, that will have left. And I think possibly, like, I think there's part of Carlos Correa, even though, you know, he got the opt-out deal,
yeah,
you know, with Minnesota when he left here. So he opts out after 1 year. Goes and actually gets two big contracts that were both unraveled by his medicals, and then winds up back with the Twins, 6 years, $200 million. The high offer the Astros made him was 5 years, $160. So he's ultimately going to make more money. He's guaranteed more money than the $160. But again, like Bregman and like Altuve and like some of these, Carlos Correa, if he'd stayed here, would have been a hero. You know, he would have been an Astros hero. We wouldn't have had Jeremy Pena. But I think there's got to be part of Carlos Correa that regrets not taking that deal. And I think that, you know, unless Bregman just wanted to leave and, you know, put up his own shingle somewhere else, there may ultimately be a part of Alex Bregman that regrets it because the Astros just moved on. They're like, okay, we can't wait on you anymore. You know,
I think this is where, like, I'm not trying to be, like, overly idealistic here or anything, but in terms of just kind of balancing the money side of things with the emotional side of things or the sentimental side of things, I do think that sometimes if you're a player of a certain caliber, and especially one who's played on a championship team, yes, it's a look, I don't begrudge people for going and taking the highest dollar amount out there, but at the end of the day, it's all it's generational wealth, and it's more money than the vast majority of people ever see in their lives. But like when you talk about the things that will endure for decades onward for the rest of your life, I mean, there's a certain value in your quality of life in being a Craig Biggio, a Jeff Bagwell, like having an attachment to that team and organization and the fan base. And those guys didn't have championships to even compound the matters. That I do think it's worth it. Like, no matter what your personal priorities are and everything, I think when you're a young man, you might not really appreciate that. And you're like, 'cause even if you're not planning on making Houston your permanent home, it's a different feeling. Like, I have a little smidgen of that just in being from, like, on the first Texans team.
Yes.
You know?
No,
like,
doubt.
Obviously, I'm not nearly the caliber of player of Alex Bregman or any of those guys. We didn't come close to winning a championship. But, like, I feel an attachment to Texans fans. And that wasn't even the only place I spent my career, but it was the best stretch I had in my career, and I was kind of like I was just one of the first guys there, and like I feel really lucky to have had that. So it'll be a shame for Alex Bregman if he was gonna leave and be a mercenary, which is fine, that's cool. But man, you also, if you don't end up getting the extra money, and you did kind of walk away from being that guy who was a lifer. It's just, look, he's going to be just fine.
Yeah.
It's not going to destroy his life or anything. But I wish some younger players would just be able to maybe kind of have that perspective on it.
Yeah.
And not get as hyper-competitive about the price tag. And especially when you consider the actual, because look, the price tag, so much of it boils down to ego. Because we've shown this time and time again, very few players take into account the fact that Texas doesn't have any state income tax.
Mm-hmm.
They want their ego fluffed, and they want to be able to say that they were the highest paid player or whatever. Because on the bottom line, a lesser offer from the Astros could still end up with more net income than a lot of the other places.
Yeah, no doubt. So we'll see what happens. Spillane was sitting next to me at the Christmas Day game, and I was like, man, I don't know. Bregman might not get paid. And he's like, he's getting paid. He's getting paid. I'm like, well, who's going to pay him? Well, he's just getting paid. And I'm like, oh. So now I'm rooting for this to not happen so that when I see Spo at the wild card game, I need it to happen between whatever Bregman gets. I need to happen between now and the second weekend in January so that I can rub Spo's nose in it.
That's a little bit of a, yeah, when somebody who's smarter than you about a topic is like kind of just patronizing towards you or dismissive, I guess. I did that once back when I was on CSN Houston on some kind of panel discussion. You know, this is when I was relatively new to media, and I was studying hardcore on Rockets stuff. And I brought up Mote Yunus to Jonathan Fagan as a guy that might get more playing time because I'd been, doing my research and everything.
Sure.
And Fagan kind of brushed me aside.
Oh, yeah?
And just kind of scoffed at the notion that Mote Yunus was going to play more. And then lo and behold, Mote Yunus started playing a lot more. And I felt like,
Did he? Did you see him again? And did he apologize to you?
Or? No. I didn't hold a grudge or anything. But it was a lesson learned.
Yeah.
The other lesson I learned was when I was suggesting that I defer to a lot of you guys when it comes to baseball because you've got such good like long term memories of baseball and everything. But when I was like kind of like I was thinking why they should really be moving Springer to center field. And both Mike Meltzer and Robert Hensley scoffed at me. They scoffed at me.
Baseball diehards. Oh man.
Yeah. And yeah. I was like, I guess I'm an idiot. I guess like I don't know what I'm talking about.
So you didn't rub Fagan's nose in it, but I would imagine did you?
Oh yeah, I rubbed it in. Yeah.
Sure,
Meltzer and Hensley heard about it. Yeah.
They would have to, right?
It was a breaking news sounder the first time ever. They said they were gonna. No, I don't.
That would have been funny.
That's the kind of crap I would have pulled though.
That would have been funny. We're getting a lot of text messages on. We're getting some college football ones. We'll circle back to the college football playoff. I agree with this person. I don't like how the bowl games have evolved. I remember waking up on New Year's Day with several TVs going because there were multiple games going on all day long. Yeah, like that got ruined with the BCS. Like it's been that way for a while. The one thing I will say is that the college football playoff has at least taken the major bowl games, which are now quarterfinal games, and given them all to us within a 24-hour period. When it was the BCS, they used to just string them out like Rose Bowl this night, Sugar Bowl this night. I'm with the texter. I always loved the fire hose of football games on New Year's Day, that there were like 12 football games. Now, of course, that was also back when you had like 60 writers vote for who the national champion was.
Yeah.
Those were the good old days. Yeah.
College football has annoyed me for so many years that now it's gotten to the point, like just various aspects of it, mm-hmm. just whether it was the computer program or the old BCS or anything else before that. There's always something that's a huge controversy about the way you determine a champion that now it's just part of the deal for me. So I just try not to overthink. Like, I don't know how old the person who's texting is. After you go through several decades of this, you realize that this is just part of college football.
Yeah.
The arguing, the jockeying for position, the defense of your own record, all of that stuff. It's just, that's college football. It's just part of the deal.
Yep.
And it's gonna keep changing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing set in stone.
Ocho texted this in earlier, and I thought the exact same thing watching the game. Gentlemen, what do you think of drafting Matthew Golden from Texas as a Tank Dell replacement if he declares for the draft? I was thinking that exact same thing watching Golden in that game yesterday against ASU. Former U of H kid like Tank Dell, but transferred to UT, and I think he was the one transfer that drove Dana Holgorsen nuts. I think that's when Dana Holgorsen started referring to like the big school sniffing around U of H. I thought the same thing. He's not as like hyper twitchy as Tank. Like nobody is. Like Tank might be healthy. Tank might be the twitchiest person of all time. But he does bring some of the same stuff to the table in terms of his ability to get open and get deep. Like he's a really good football player.
Yeah, and he can play all over. Like, you don't look at him and think, you know, with Tank, people still look at him. I listen to opposing teams' podcasts and everything. They're like, they think he's a slot receiver. They're like, well, our nickel's going to be on him a lot. Like, no, he plays all over the place. It's just, there's not, these days, your slot receiver might just as easily look like Nico Collins as he does Tank Dell. That part of it, I think, in his ability to create separation. The only question would be, all right, I don't know if you need to, if Tank Dell has a chance of playing, like assuming he gets his surgeries done and everything will be all right, I'm hesitant to look. I don't want another small guy. I feel like that's your small guy right there. Mm-hmm. You don't need a guy. Like, you got too many of these zippy little guys. And Golden's a little bit bigger than Tank, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's not tiny like Tank
is. He's not huge, though, either.
So maybe he's the... Yeah, maybe he's actually the best... Maybe he's that best alternative there. Yeah, I would like them to have more... I mean, like, you look at it right now, and Nico is the only tall, big receiver that's got explosive speed. Now, you're not going to go out and find somebody that's as explosive as Nico very easily, but I don't want to be a small receiving group.
No. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Quarterbacks and running backs around the NFL, what they bought their offensive lines. Do we know what CJ bought his offensive line? I don't know that we do, but did he match up with any of these? There's one in here that I think is particularly stupid, and I think Seth Payne will agree with me as to why I think this is stupid, and we will share that with you coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln of Sugarland. On the Southwest Freeway, exit Kirkwood and take the first U-turn at West Airport under the giant American flag. The best football breakdown is here on Sports Radio 610. The day after every game, join Payne and Pendergast in the loop and the drive on a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday. Game analysis, inside info, and your reaction starting at 6 a.m. on Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday. Houston's sports leader. Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
News.
Sports Radio 610. Houston Texans breaking news.
All right, Houston Texans breaking news. There we go. I promise there's breaking news. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. The Pro Bowl nominees are out. Not nominees. The Pro Bowl rosters have been named in the AFC and the NFC.
Is designee a word?
Yeah. So there's four Houston Texans that were named to the Pro Bowl. Okay. Texans got four. I put the number at 3.5 earlier this week. You and I went through this yesterday. Yeah, but there's some surprises.
You must be so rich.
You and I went through the ones that we thought had a chance. You know, Derek Stingley Jr., the two defensive ends, Joe Mixon, Nico Collins, the specialist.
I thought Kamari Lassiter might sneak in, even though cornerbacks, it usually takes a little bit of a... they don't get the respect right off the bat, especially when we're in a first-round pick, but
There are four Houston Texans that have been named to the Pro Bowl, two named starters. I'll start with the two that have been named reserves. Joe Mixon, not surprising.
Okay.
AFC running back depth is not... Derrick Henry starting, obviously, or named the starter, and Joe Mixon and Jonathan Taylor were named the backup running backs. I was very excited to see that Nico Collins made it. Nico Collins, a reserve, but the two starters, Ja'Marr Chase and Jerry Jeudy of the Cleveland Browns. How about that? Cleveland, whose quarterback situation has been a mess all year, got Jerry Jeudy into the Pro Bowl as a starter. So Jeudy kind of realizing some of that potential that was not realized in Denver. Nico Collins and Zay Flowers named the backup wide receivers for the AFC. That's cool to see, man. Nico missed 5.5 games, but when he's been on the field, he's been one of the best receivers in football this year.
You know what's crazy is, Jerry Jeudy is, he's 13th in receiving in the league right now, at 1,166 yards receiving. And, like, everybody above him is either, who is not Ja'Marr Chase, is either a tight end or a wide receiver from the NFC. Garrett Wilson had a little bit more apparent.
Garrett Wilson didn't even make.
Oh wait, no, I'm looking at total receptions instead of yardage.
Okay.
Dumb rookie mistake.
Yeah,
sorry,
I was wondering.
That.
I'm like, damn, that's some tight ends there getting in that 1,000 range. Yeah.
Those numbers are received. So Jerry Jeudy is 6th overall in the NFL. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Brian Thomas is above him.
And Brian Thomas didn't even make. And he's a rookie, so maybe he got to earn your stripes. But the four wide receivers: Ja'Marr Chase, Jerry Jeudy, starters. Nico Collins, Zay Flowers, the reserves. Now, the Texans had two players, Seth, named starters to the Pro Bowl.
Okay.
Do you care to take a stab at who they are?
I'm going to guess it's Derek Stingley and Danielle Hunter.
Derek Stingley is correct.
Okay.
Neither Danielle Hunter nor Will Anderson even made the top four edge rushers in the AFC, top three. Three go, and it's hard to argue. Yeah. Miles Garrett, Trey Hendrickson, and Max Crosby. I mean, like defensive end in the AFC. If you're making the Pro Bowl, man. Now I will say this: both are alternates. They're both alternates.
Uh-huh, okay,
Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. But no,
they only take three edge rushers or
three defensive ends. Yep, three defensive ends. Yeah,
but are they considered like all three starters?
Two
are
starters. One's a reserve. The two starters are Miles Garrett and Trey Hendrickson, and the. The reserve is Max Crosby.
That's messed up, bro.
Yeah.
So the reserve that you're talking about in all right.
Yeah, they didn't.
Are they calling it defensive end or edge now?
Defensive end. It is.
Oh, okay. That's part of it.
NFL.
Depending on your 3-4 or 4-3.
Yeah,
all right.
It's defensive end.
They got to fix that. They just got to start making it edge.
For what it's worth, TJ Watt, they do have outside linebacker listed as a position.
Yeah.
TJ Watt and Nick Benito of the Broncos made it there with Khalil Mack as the backup. But. There's one Texan starter left, Seth. So we got Derek Stingley, starter, Nico and Joe Mixon, both reserves.
Yeah, I'm going to guess it's Laremy Tunsil.
It is Laremy Tunsil, made it as a starting left tackle. How does that make you feel?
I expected it.
You did?
He's a good pass protector. So It is what it is. He's a haphazard run blocker. Doesn't do well against big, physical, tough defensive ends, which I kind of like. I don't know. Maybe I'm greedy. I'd like my offensive tackle to be able to handle big, tough, physical defensive ends in the run game. But he's a really good. He's an artist as a pass protector. He's a very, very good pass protector.
Yeah, I guess just to contextualize, he's a starter. Deion Dawkins of Buffalo is the other starter.
Yeah,
and Rashawn Slater of the Chargers is the reserve offense. There's three offensive tackles that make it.
Yeah. No, the whole thing about Laremy Tunsil is it's the sum total of what he is as a player and being as mediocre as a run blocker, but awesome as a pass blocker. It rubs me the wrong way in terms of the ethos of the offense. That's what bothers me the most.
Yeah,
and also the fact that he's so bad in space. That he's just as athletic as he is. If he were a bad inline run blocker, but at least when he got out on screens and everything, he was running downfield and seeking people out in open space. But he's atrocious in that regard too. Yeah. That's what annoys me. But I totally get why people that are watching mostly as a pass protector outside the city probably they're like, oh yeah, hell yeah, you got to protect your quarterback.
I'll be honest with you, my take on Laremy Tunsil this year has been in terms of the Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
and this is again without looking at the rest of the AFC. You know, some of it comes down to that. Like, okay, well, who are the other guys? Well, he's better than these guys. I thought that spate of penalties that he had early in the season, would kind of ruin him for this year in terms of accolades. It was so drastic and so highly publicized too. They were playing, it was happening in very prominent games,
That's what annoys me about it is that the other guys who are genuine all pros, guys who are future Hall of Famers and everything, they get very few false starts. So whenever anybody tried to hop in with the, well, he's having a false start because he's trying to time the snap count. Guess who else does that? Those all-pro offensive tackles who might get one or two false starts in an entire season.
Yeah.
Trent Williams, remember I went back and I think it was 3.5 seasons that you would have had to go for Trent Williams to have as many false starts as Laremy Tunsil had in the first six games this year.
That's right, yep.
So part of him being really good as a pass protector is that, he aggressively and selfishly times the snap count to the point where it makes him really good at pass protection. All you have to do is every now and then kill a drive with a false start. Yeah.
Hey, there's nothing about what's happening right now in this segment that is a disincentive for Laremy Tunsil to keep doing what he's doing.
Right, he should keep doing that. He's just getting be an independent operator. He's don't do what's best for the team. Right. Do what's best for your PFF pass blocking grades.
Getting named to the Pro Bowl every year. Again, he's getting... Now,
and he's going to get a huge... Nick will give him another huge contract. Yeah. That's the kind of guy we want. Remember, CJ called him a pro-pro.
He's a vet-vet.
In CJ's mind, that's how a true veteran operates.
Yeah,
you know,
he's a vet.
There you go. Everything that Laremy Tunsil does is that's what you want to emulate. Apparently,
this is interesting. So here are the alternates. There's six, and we're going through the NFL has named the rosters for the Pro Bowl. Four Texans made the Pro Bowl. Nico Collins and Joe Mixon as backups, and Laremy Tunsil and Derek Stingley Jr. I'm happy for Stingley. We talked about him earlier in the show. Stingley, well deserved. Six Texan players named alternates, which means a few of them are going to play because guys are going to the Super Bowl or guys don't want to play, they're injured, whatever. Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson are literally the next two guys at defensive end. So if anybody bows out, Danielle's in, and if anybody else bows out, Will is in. Tommy Townsend is the first alternate at punter. Kyme Fairbairn is the fourth alternate at kicker. So Kyme was pretty far down the list. For a guy who's kicked all these 50-plus yard field goals this year, he's fourth alternate, so he's fifth on the list for kickers. Jimmy Ward, fourth alternate at safety. He obviously won't play because he's undergone foot surgery. C.J. Stroud, second alternate at quarterback, which is at the exact same spot he was last year in the Pro Bowl balloting. Are you surprised?
Is there a list of the total voters, a ranking of how they were or anything?
I don't. I mean, I've got the starters at quarterback here. It doesn't list the alternates. I just have an article that says where the Texans are on the alternate list. Mm-hmm. The starter at quarterback is Josh Allen. The backups are Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson, and it's hard to argue with any of those. I don't know who the fourth alternate would be. Probably Mahomes, I'm guessing, is Mahomes and then CJ, I'm guessing?
If you go by, look, like the QB rankings and everything are all just, they're all over the place these days. It's just like QBR used to be a pretty good solid one. You felt like, yeah, that matches the eyeball test.
Yeah.
So I'll just pick random. I'll pick QBR randomly.
Okay.
In the AFC, it goes Lamar Jackson, yeah. Joe Burrow, yeah. Josh Allen.
Yeah.
They're all at the top for the entire league.
Okay.
But then I'm going down, 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 down until you get to Justin Herbert, like midway through. It's all NFC until you get to Justin Herbert. And then Tua Tagovailoa after him.
Yeah.
Drake May, Trevor Lawrence.
Wow.
Jameis Winston.
All with better QBRs than CJ.
Jameis Winston, Bo Nix, yeah. Russell Wilson.
Oof.
Then CJ Stroud.
Okay, yeah. You know what?
Just above, CJ's one notch above Aaron Rodgers.
I don't think we should be surprised by this, that CJ essentially is the fifth quarterback, right? There's three,
yeah.
There's three that make it, and then there's alternates. He's the second alternate, which is where he was last year. Look, you talk to the Texans in the building over there, and they think CJ has improved in a lot of areas this year.
Yeah.
You know, they think that CJ's having a great year. I think if you know, because a third of it is players, a third of it is coaches. And I, quite honestly, and it's ironic that this is the same group of people that voted Laremy Tunsil a starter, but I think a lot of them look at the Texans and they look at the offensive coordinator and they look at the offensive line. And obviously these people voting, the players and coaches, because the fans didn't do CJ any favors. He wasn't even in the top 10 for fans.
Yeah.
The players and coaches, this tells us, Seth, there is still a very healthy respect level for CJ Stroud around the league.
No, and I think they take degree of difficulty into it.
Yeah.
And it just, even with Justin Herbert, I think there's a little bit of like, okay, but is, you know, it's this looks more like the Justin Herbert that we expect to see, but he's going to have a little of what Harbaugh's quarterbacks had to deal with in college too. Like, all right, is how much is it is the system, the running, et cetera,
yeah.
et cetera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of them are probably looking at it, like players looking at it. Would I rather have C.J. Stroud or Tua Tagovailoa as my quarterback? Would I rather have C.J. Stroud or Bo Nix as my... Y'all, I'm just coming up with the names you said are ahead of him in QBR. I think the answer to a lot of... You know, if we're drawing something from this Pro Bowl voting that's relevant to the Texans, I think there's a lot of players and coaches around the league that still have a very, very high value on C.J. Stroud.
Right, I think now. I'm most... I am surprised that either Danielle Hunter or... And part of that is because they don't... They call it defensive end instead of edge rusher. But I thought that either Danielle or Will would get it.
I did too.
But you know what? Like, I don't think either of those... You know, Will, I'm sure, would love to get a Pro Bowl nod. I'm not saying that... But I don't think it's what he's fixated on.
No.
In this defense... This defense is a tough nut to crack in trying to figure out just how good they are, because there's some things they do really, really well. And I know there's various rankings that have them in like top three in the EPA and the pressure rate, all this or that. The fact of the matter is they allow the other team to score too much. Like, that's a, hey, Seth, what's the advanced stat that's keeping them from being a genuinely elite defense? How about being the worst in the league at allowing passing touchdowns?
Yeah.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah,
and they're around 10th or 11th in scoring defense or wherever they are right now. So they're not a genuinely elite defense, but they do a lot of things really, really well. It's just there's still another step they need to take to where all of a sudden you start getting guys that maybe shouldn't be in the Pro Bowl, but they're in the Pro Bowl because they're such a good defense. That's going to be the determining factor on a lot of these guys.
All right, we'll get back to the topic we had teased, but the Texans in the Pro Bowl, that was worth a discussion for sure. What did C.J. Stroud get his offensive line anything? And if he did, does it line up with some of the gifts that are in this article in The Athletic? Some of them are crazy. Some of them I don't know if I'd want if I were an offensive lineman. We'll tell you what they are coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Man, I'm totally immersed in these Pro Bowl rosters. I didn't even look at the NFC because the Texans are in the AFC. If someone had told you before the season, we're going to get to the QB gifts for O-linemen here in 30 seconds. Someone had told you before the season the three quarterbacks in the NFC for the Pro Bowl. Keep in mind, this is a conference that had Dak Prescott, MVP runner-up. Jalen Hurts, who's been to a Super Bowl within the last 15 months or whatever. I could go on and on. You know, like Jordan Love got a big contract before the season's. Caleb Williams, rookie phenom, right?
Yeah.
And I haven't even explored the other two divisions yet. Those are just names from two of the divisions. Jared Goff, I would have guessed he could make it. You know, quarterback of one of the best teams. He's the starter for the NFC. Would not have guessed that. Jaden Daniels and Sam Darnold are the two back.
Payne and Pendergast.
That was a game.
Jaden Daniels.
Payne and Pendergast are the fourth starter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Jaden Daniels, like if someone said, hey, a rookie is going to be one of the three NFC quarterbacks, I would have said, okay, well, Caleb Williams, you know, and then. But no, it's Jaden Daniels back up.
Well, and I'll tell you another. I wouldn't have been
Sam Darnold.
That Baker Mayfield could be in the conversation too. It's been a revitalization and resurgence for a bunch of different NFC quarterbacks this year.
And you know who else the big winners are in this? The class of free agent running backs last year. Remember the top four guys were Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, and I'll put Joe Mixon in that group, right? Guys who were either free agents, or Mixon was essentially a free agent. He was going to get cut, and then the Texans traded a seventh-round pick for him. They all made the Pro Bowl. All of them did. Saquon and Derrick Henry are the two starters for their respective conferences, and Josh Jacobs and Joe Mixon are backups. That's a big win for that class of running backs, man.
The running backs especially, and maybe in this league, this year where it seemed like in hindsight, it was primed for a resurgence of running backs because of the types of defense, the types of coverages teams were playing and everything else. And those two teams, like, used the running back the way they should be used. And it was the perfect match, too. I think Saquon Barkley for the Eagles and Derrick Henry for the Ravens, they're just the right fit. I don't think either one of those guys would have had that same type of year playing here in Houston. So I don't... It takes away a little bit of the buyer's remorse because I wanted Derrick Henry because whichever one of those guys came to Houston, they wouldn't have gotten the same performance here in Houston. That's There's right. just too much other stuff wrong. They were perfectly positioned to take advantage of those running backs on those two teams.
Jonathan Greenard named a starting defensive end in the NFC. Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr., both alternates in the AFC, both have had tremendous years. Very happy for Jonathan Greenard leaving in free agency and becoming an even better football player.
Yeah, Greenard's one of those guys that, you know, he was a little bit like Nico in that he just had injuries in his first few years and had shown flashes and I thought improved as a player each year, but he just finally put an entire season together. And I don't have remorse over the exchange of players. And I think Daniil's been worth it, especially as a mentor to Will Anderson.
100%.
And yet, I think Greenard's probably going to be good for a few more years with Minnesota.
Yeah.
Now, if the injuries pop up and are a concern again, then okay, maybe you dodged a bullet on that one. But if I had to choose, I think I'd prefer Jonathan Greenard right now for the long term than Danielle Hunter. I mean, Danielle Hunter's only under contract through next season.
Yeah. No, it's a strange thing because that would be normally one where I would have buyer's remorse, but Danielle's been really good, and Jonathan Greenard's a great dude who's really built himself into something. So these quarterbacks buying stuff for their offensive line, we don't know if CJ did or not. I would imagine he got them something, but we've not heard anything. I've tried to ask a few people. Nobody really knows, but there's an article in The Athletic, and it kind of power ranks them, the gifts that they got. What is Joe Burrow doing buying samurai swords for his offensive line? If you were an offensive lineman on the Bengals, would you want to get an authentic Japanese katana sword?
They were gushing over it because it was unique. And also, he says that it was because he had asked the offensive line what they might like, and a couple of them had said guns. Yeah. And I think Burrow thought, like, I don't know, the league seems to frown on that or whatever. So he's like, oh, I'll get him a weapon of some sort. So he went and got, like, he didn't just go out, you know, go on Amazon and buy some samurai swords. He got, like ones that were handcrafted in Japan, and there's a history behind each of them from the sword maker and his family legacy and everything. And then guys got to choose them. I actually like that. I've seen a few of our listeners thought that was a dumb gift.
Okay.
I think that's pretty badass.
No, it is. On the surface, I'm like, all right, what are you going to do with this? But that there's a story behind it.
Yeah.
That they got to pick their own.
Yeah.
That they wanted weapons, but Joe Burrow kind of pivoted and said, I'm going to get you a weapon that's actually kind of a little more unique here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
As far as for intimidation, look, I've seen plenty of people exercise their open carry rights in Texas. The only time it's ever really caused me alarm, like I haven't had one of those viral moments where I walk in and there's some psychotic looking dude with a with an AR-15 on his back.
Yeah.
The only time it's bothered me was when I was in Clear Lake and there was a dude walking down the street with a samurai sword.
Jeez.
And I was kind of like, I don't like the looks of this. Yeah. Don't like it one bit.
Yeah.
Don't like it one bit. Yeah.
Most badass use of a samurai sword in a movie by a non-samurai has got to be Bruce Willis in Pulp Fiction, right? Where he grabs he grabs a samurai sword and goes back down into the dungeon to rescue Marcellus Wallace.
Takes on an assaulter. Yes.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. There's a movie on Netflix right now called The Dead Don't Die. It's with Bill Murray and Kylo Ren. That dude.
Oh, Adam Driver. Yeah.
Adam Driver.
Yeah.
And it's a really quirky, weird movie that I liked a lot, but I'm still trying to process it mentally. It's a zombie movie.
Okay.
But there's a character in there who has a samurai sword, and she's pretty badass.
Pretty good? Okay, I got to check that out then. Number two on this list was the Green Bay Packers, and it's Josh Jacobs who actually got this gift. Wrapped up customized diamond pendants for all 12 offensive linemen. Commissioned by Zoe Frost and Company, a custom jewelry maker based right here in Houston. How about that? Would you like to get a customized diamond pendant?
Okay,
worth
that's an
lots
interesting
of money?
One. Personally, I would very much appreciate the gesture.
Yes,
but I would never wear it. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not a necklace guy.
Right.
So yeah. Likewise though, it's not like I would ever use a samurai sword. Well, no, I take that back. I would. I'd be chopping all. I'd go full Gallagher on all of my produce. Yeah.
Seth has the best chopped melons. I don't know.
I'd
what
have
it
so
is.
Many good TikTok videos of
you
cutting
would.
Things
you
up
would.
Around.
That's actually very true. I'm with you on the pendant. I'm not a huge jewelry guy.
Yeah.
Like the samurai sword would sit prominently somewhere in my home.
That's a
like,
cool, right? Yeah. You can put that up in your home and everything. Yeah, I feel like the pendant. It's a little bit of you know what that might feel. Now I don't know what the composition of their offensive line is. How many guys are into wearing a lot of jewelry
sure,
or not?
Sure.
That sometimes as a gift giver, you got to remember like, oh, I'm buying for people that might have different tastes than me.
Yeah.
So, but it's still a very nice gesture.
The gesture is great.
Yeah.
For the Eagles, Saquon Barkley, he's not going to get a chance at the NFL rushing record. They're going to rest him this weekend. He went in with Jalen Hurts. They comboed it, chipped in. They did the chip in, and they got golf carts for each of their offensive line. Personalized golf carts with their last name and number on it. Those are big because it's not even like a golf thing anymore. These guys all live in gated communities, and you use the golf cart to take the kids over to the park or just drive.
You
to
use
neighbors.
A golf cart to skirt the DUI laws is what you do.
Whatever.
So yeah if you're living in the villages or whatnot.
Yeah.
Hey, one of those guys. I'd like to live in the villages.
Golf
you
carts.
Know what the villages is?
No.
Oh, it's like the biggest retirement community in America.
Oh, really?
It's almost. I think it's like an entire town that's basically a retirement community. So it's a master planned community, but it's gigantic.
I got you.
And it sounds like a good time. It's got the highest rate of STDs in the nation.
The villages? Retirement community?
People kind of throw caution to the wind. They're like, I only got a few years left, and I'm like, what am I going to do? I gotta enjoy life.
To be the clinic in that community, like, see what's coming in there. Like, old Bessie, 85 years old, came in with the clap again.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, we got to get to this one here, because I at first thought when I saw the report of this, that it was Mr. Irrelevant's seventh round pick buying vehicles for his 10 offensive linemen, Brock Purdy.
Mm-hmm.
My first thought was Brock is going to get this bag that Seth and many others think he's going to get because he's already financing these vehicles. He's like, I'm going to get $60 million next year. This is no problem.
My first thought was that this was a sponsorship deal.
You would be right.
There's a corporate partner in this.
You would be right. He hasn't gotten his big payday yet. I'm reading off of this paragraph. So he turned to corporate sponsorship. Thanks to his friends at Toyota, Purdy gave his 10 linemen either a Toyota Sequoia or a Toyota Tundra.
This would be a tough one, man.
Those are expensive gifts, man.
So if Brock Purdy like didn't have to, pay for a huge portion of those, okay, cool. That's a way to go about it. I don't like this trend of like these overly exorbitant gifts given out at Christmas, but now you get to a point where as a quarterback, you might feel like, my God, this is overkill. And yet all right, is this a measuring stick that people are going to start to use?
Yeah.
And do I have to kind of go along to get along here? I don't like it. I think somebody needs to set the trend. A made man of a quarterback, a Pat Mahomes or somebody has to basically be like, nope, this is going to be merit-based.
Right.
I'm going to give out one like or that. Two badass gifts. Rest of you get gift cards.
You know where I'm at on that. In my sales background, I'm all about merit-based. I'm all about that. I have two questions about Brock's gifts to his linemen. One, did they really give them the vehicles, or is it like a three-year lease and they give the vehicle back?
That's right? A good point. Yeah. I bet, especially if they were working with Toyota.
Yeah.
Toyota, I'm guessing, was like, yeah, sure, we'll give them a two-year lease or a three-year lease.
You got to give them back at the end. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, was there any among the 10 offensive linemen who were like, okay, what about the taxes and the insurance on this thing? I mean, you basically just handed me a tax bill on this thing. Yeah.
Especially with that diamond pendant.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. If I got a diamond pendant, my first thought might be, I wonder why I break this thing up. How much of these individuals
diamonds
sell for?
Is the whole greater than the sum of the parts? That's great.
I'm not going to wear it.
That's great.
But I got to pay taxes on it? I don't know, man.
I got to find out.
Okay, that's the other thing I don't. This is my advice. I'm always amazed that these guys, like when somebody pays money for another jersey, to get another guy's jersey or something. Yeah. I'm like, okay, who are these guys' business advisors that they're just putting that out there as basically that, hey, I just paid this guy. I just want to be sure the IRS knows 100% that this is income to somebody out there.
Yeah.
That they need to report on their taxes.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah, it's a good point. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. College football playoff, big day yesterday. Both with the games and obviously something unprecedented that has resulted in a game being played today that we'll talk about. But what's been the best and worst things about this 12-team playoff so far? I've got a list. We'll go through it coming up next.